hatred that is in our world. People have turned away from religion. They've said, why should we have religion? All it does is cause chaos. All it does is bring forth prejudice and judgment. And it's not helpful to this world. So some philosophers started promoting atheism again, saying, you know, without God, maybe we wouldn't have all these troubles. But Jim Wallace is a famous preacher who's done a lot of work with the poor. And he made a comment. He said, some people believe the answer to bad religion is secularism. But that's wrong. The answer to bad religion is better religion. Prophetic rather than partisan. Broad and deep instead of narrow. Based on values as opposed to ideology. Any of you ever read Anne Rice? You like those vampire novels? She wrote those famous books, The Chronicles of the Vampires, and all those gory, mystical kinds of works. But then in around 2003, she came out with a book called Christ Our Lord Out of Egypt. I read it. It was wonderful. I couldn't believe it was the same Anne Rice. Some have said that she found the roots of her Catholic faith comforting as her husband was dying of cancer. And it brought her closer to Jesus. So it was a shock when on July 28, 2010, after writing two very popular books on Christ, this ex-Roman Catholic novelist posted her resignation as a Christian on her Facebook page. She said, "Today I quit being a Christian. I'm out." She said she was still committed to Jesus Christ, but she was rejecting Christianity. And in her post she added, "I refuse to be anti-feminist. I refuse to be anti-artificial birth control. I refuse to be anti-Democrat. I refuse to be anti-science. I refuse to be anti-life. And in the name of Christ, I quit Christianity and being Christian." As soon after she posted it, it went viral. That is, it went around the world. Anybody feel sometimes like Anne Rice? Martin Thielen is a Methodist pastor who's just written a book. He titled, "The Answer to Bad Religion is Not No Religion. It's a Guide to the Good Religion for Seekers, Skeptics, and Believers." We preached on his first book a year ago. And in this book, he does the same format. He starts with all the negatives. Bad religion engages in self-righteous judgment of others. That's the first chapter. Bad religion expresses a chronic spirit of negativity. That's the chapter 2. 3. Bad religion breeds arrogance, intolerance, and absolutism. 4. Bad religion participates in partisan politics and excessive nationalism. 5. Bad religion rosters nominal commitment to Christ, registers nominal commitment to Christ and the church. And then he switches in part 2, and he takes on, so what is the answer? Is it no religion? He says, no religion is not helpful, and explains why. And then in chapter 7, he says, no religion is not necessary. And then he goes on to look at the positives of good religion. And that's what we're going to focus on. It's my belief that if we focus on what we should be, the rest will take care of itself. You know, I am reminded of a story about a man who was driving down the street. And it was a busy street, and a very impatient and stressed out woman was following him, tailgating, in fact. And suddenly the light turned yellow, and he slowed to stop. He did the right thing, but, you know, in our hurried lifestyle, he could have gunned it a little bit and gotten through the light. And so the tailgating woman went ballistic. She honked her horn. She was so angry. She screamed in frustration, made signs at him that she had missed her chance to get through the intersection as well. She continued her ranting and raving, and she heard a tap on the window and looked up, and there was a police officer. He had a very serious look on his face, and he ordered her to exit the car and place her hands on the car. He took her to the police station where she was searched, fingerprinted, photographed, and placed in a holding cell. After a couple of hours, another policeman released her. He escorted her back to the desk where the arresting officer waited for her with her personal effects. He said, "I'm sorry for the mistake. You see, when I pulled up behind your car, you were blowing your horn and making obscene gestures to the guy in front of you and cursing a blue streak at him. And I noticed the 'What Would Jesus Do?' bumper sticker. And the 'Choose Life' license plate holder. And the 'Follow Me to Sunday School' bumper sticker. And the chrome-plated Christian fish emblem on the truck. And naturally, I assumed you had stolen the car." I laughed pretty hard when I heard that story. But I got to tell you, there was a little bit of a conviction as well. I wonder what people see when I'm driving. I wonder how I reflect the Lord. One young man said, "If all my religion is going to do is change my Sunday schedule, then I'm not interested." Huh. Interesting. I want something that's going to change my finances, my sex life, the way I work, the way I treat my family, the way I treat others, the way I use my time. I want it to affect my life. That's what authentic faith is all about. It's about changing who we are. It's about saying, "This is who I want to be like." And so we have to think about it. Because if authentic faith impacts every part of our life, then how are we going to be different? Do you know that the average American church-going Christian gives less than 2% of his or her money to charity of any kind, let alone the church? The problem is, we don't really take our faith as a transformation. We think of it as something nice to do. But it has radical consequences. There was a young man in my youth group. He was a junior higher, and I convinced him to go on our first junior high Amor trip. Yes, I took junior hires down and put hammers in their hands. It was a scary proposition. And I was very cautious when they climbed on the roofs. But Matt had an affinity for this. As he grew to be older in high school, he was really rebellious. And his dad came to me as a sophomore and he said, "Matt's getting into all kinds of trouble. And he loves you. He loves being a youth group, but he's into drugs. He's running with a bad crowd. I need you to spend some time with him." So I did. And he and I got close. He was an athlete. We both loved volleyball. He was on the Palisades High team of varsity as his sophomore. And he kept coming all the time to Mexico. We did a week-long trip for our high school kids. And every year, Matt was there. And he grew through this adolescent phase of rebellion so that when he graduated high school, and this is where the pastor got in trouble, the dad who had come to me 4 years earlier and asked me to spend time with him now came to me and said, "Matt is telling me he's not going to college." His dad was a college professor. His mom, who was Jewish, was a teacher. And his dad said, "He's taken his faith too far." He heard Tony Campolo at one of our camps. And Tony Campolo talked about setting up a year ministry for graduates from high school before they started college so that they could be trained in what it meant to really serve God. And he said, "I'm going to Philadelphia to do that." And his dad was livid. Talk him out of it, Bill. Now that's putting a preacher in a hard place. Talk him out of faith. Huh. Well, I didn't do it. And Matt's dad, Dave, and I are friends, but it weakened our friendship. Matt went off. And after his experience, which he shared with me throughout the year, I lost touch with him. Till 7 years, 7 years ago, I was already here, and I found him on Facebook. He is a pastor in Seattle. You see, the problem is, we don't take our faith seriously enough. Even us ministers don't. Matt is going to work. In the book, he talks about a young girl who plays or runs on a track team for her junior high school. And like many of our youth, there was a cancellation of a track meet, and the track meet was rescheduled on a weekend that she was going to serve the poor in her community with her church youth group. And she went to the coach and said, "I can't come. I'm committed to going to help these poor people." And the coach said, "If you aren't here, you need to put your team first. And if you aren't here, you can just turn in your jersey." She came back in tears after a day of thinking about it and handed the jersey to him. What's more important? Well, you see, that's the question in life, isn't it? What is important? I found myself puzzling over this while I was in North Carolina, because in rare moments I was reading a book called The Mysteries of the Middle Ages by Thomas Cahill. And I was reacquainted with Thomas Aquinas and Roger Bacon and some of the minds of that era that focused on what does it mean to be Christian? What is important? And the things those people accomplished was amazing. Next time you feel pleased with yourself for having organized a spice rack or filing your bills, think about the Swedish naturalist, Carl Linnaeus. He undertook the task of organizing all of God's creation, and he did it very well. He devised a taxonomic classification system that botanists and biologists still use today, over 200 years later. And it was so flexible that the thousands of corrections in history that scientists have found all fit in this system. And this system breaks down everything, every plant, every person, puts it in a classification. It's amazing what he filed. For example, a creature belonging to the kingdom Animalia, the phylum Chordata, the subphylum Vertebrata, the class Mammalia, the order Carnivora, the family Canidae, the genus Canis, and the species Familiaris can be nothing more than a family dog. He organized everybody. Think of the hearts and minds that people have put to valuing in their lives. And what has been accomplished by the human mind, by the human energy. People answer this question differently. What's most important? Some people say finances are important. They work hard. They save well. They're either real estate or stocks and bonds or IRAs or 401ks or whatever. But the problem is, if that's the most important thing, we know that those things are out of our control. You could do everything right and end up a pauper. Other people think their jobs are what's important. They invest enormous hours into their career. They climb to the top of their ladder. They work hard to earn their job security. But we know that job security is not security anymore. Other people say physical health is the point. They eat healthily. They exercise regularly. They do the right things. They're all there, ready to show up, and then they have a heart attack. Health is not dependable. Other people say family's the main point in life. Well, we spend a lot of time on our family, as we should. But the problem is that loved ones are not always dependable, are they? They grow up, they move away, they die, they sometimes leave us, sometimes they want a divorce. Finances, work, health, family, they're all really important to the human life. I don't mean to minimize that. They're incredibly important. But they are a result of the most important thing. They can't be the most important thing in and of themselves. So what is the point? What's the point of religion? More specifically, what's the point of the Christian religion? Well, according to the Bible, the priority is love. Paul puts it this way in Romans 12. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with mutual affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Have you ever made that your goal in the day? No matter how much honor somebody shows you, you outdo them. You show them more honor than they show you. You make your whole day just that goal. Try it. It's a pretty amazing exercise. Do not lag in zeal. Be ardent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in suffering. Persevere in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and extend hospitality to strangers. That's why family promise is so important to us. That's why the shelter is important to us. We're told by God. It's part of the important package. You know, there's one bumper sticker that I was amazed at. It says, if you love Jesus, tithe. Anyone can honk. You might hear that again during stewardship season. But the truth is, do something meaningful. Not trivial. You are in the image of God. You are God's ambassador here. With every breath you breathe in, it's a gift from God. With every breath you exhale, it's your gift to this world on God's behalf. Jesus says it. Love is the most important. Mark 12. One of the scribes came near and heard them disputing with one another. And seeing that Jesus answered them well, he asked him, what commandment is first of all? Jesus answered, the first is, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one, and you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second one is this. Jesus cheated. He couldn't answer with one simple thing because it's both and. The second is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There are no other commandments greater than these. Do you remember the question that prompted Jesus to tell that famous parable about the Good Samaritan? That one that showed the righteous priest that walked over the guy and then had that lousy Samaritan that's hated by all to go and take care of him. Do you remember the question that prompted him telling that? Who is my neighbor? He was asking the question based on this. Love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, Jesus, who's my neighbor? He tells him, even the enemy is your neighbor. You know, there's this great hillbilly preacher. He's a professor. His name is Fred Craddock. I got to meet him once. He grew up in the back woods of Tennessee. And he tells all kinds of great wild stories. One day he said he stopped off at a cafe. And he was sitting there as an old retired preacher. And a guy sitting in the booth next to him said, hey, I heard you're a preacher. He said, yep. He said, I want to tell you a story. He said, when I was a little boy, I was born out of wedlock. I never knew my father. He ran away and left my mother and me. We were dirt poor. But in my day, we were absolutely ashamed of who we were. We were told that we were sinners, and I was the event of a sin. But then we moved to this little community. And the church there had gotten a new preacher. And I didn't have much to do on Sunday morning, so I snuck in the back door alone, a little kid. And that guy had some good things to say. And I listened to him and I kind of liked him. But I was ashamed. I thought that God might strike me dead if anybody knew I was there. Because I was a sinner and a product of sin. And so every day I would creep out the back before he was done with the service so I could get away from people. Any of you do that? I've known people to do that. I'm out of here, Bill. One day the preacher spoiled his plan. One day the preacher, before he said the amen, walked down the aisle and stood by the only door of the church. This old man said, as a little boy, I cringed into my seat. I waited till everybody had left, hoping that the preacher'd leave. But he stood there. He said, then I couldn't hide any longer. The preacher started walking toward me. And the preacher said, hey, son, I noticed you've been coming. Who's your daddy? Apparently the preacher saw how his face turned. Because the preacher got a message that that was the wrong question to ask. And so without skipping a beat, the preacher said, ah, no, you don't need to tell me. I know whose daddy you are. I know who you are. Because I can see it in your face. You're a child of God. The same child of God as Miles, as every person you will meet. That boy grew up to be Ben Hooper. He became the governor of Tennessee. And when he retired, he went back to the little village, sat as an old man in the little cafe, and reflected on what the church had meant to him. It changed his perspective. Love. Acceptance. Outreach to those around us. That's love. Paul says it this way. Now, faith, hope, and love abide these three. But the greatest of these is love. John picks it up. It's throughout the Bible. You can hardly open a page and not read about love. Beloved, let us love one another because love is from God. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. And whoever does not love does not know God. Wow. So what is love? You ever seen the movie Fiddler on the Roof or the musical? It's a great scene in it. Tevye and Goldie are discussing love. You see, they lived in a Jewish-Russian culture where marriages were arranged by their parents. They had not even met until the wedding day. But times are changing. Their daughters wanted to get married for love. And Tevye's confused. And so he asks Goldie, do you love me? And she resists the question. She's busy and doesn't want to talk about that. It's never been approached before. But he presses her to answer the question. Do you love me? And finally, she blurts out that after over the past 25 years, she's washed his clothes, cooked his meals, cleaned his house, and even milked his cow. Later, she adds, for 25 years, I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years, my bed is his bed. If that's not love, what is? See, Goldie understood that love isn't a feeling. It shows itself in action. There was a teacher who was cleaning out her attic one day, and she came upon a silver picture of Jesus hanging on the cross, a crucifix. She'd gotten it years before, She hadn't thought of it in years. But she took it down from the attic and she laid it down on top of her desk, and just so happened that it was on top of her bills. So when she pulled out her checkbook to write her bills, she looked at the crucifix and said, "I'm a Christian. If Christ controls my bills, how am I spending my money? What would he think about this?" So she moved the cross. How many of you would do the same thing? Come on. But she happened to move it on a group of tests that she was correcting for her kids. And when she looked over there, she thought, if I'm a Christian, what does that mean for me as a teacher? Should I be teaching, and what should I be doing? So she took the cross off that one too. And she put it down on a book that was over there. But the book was a family album. It had pictures of her friends and her family. And she thought, if Christ is part of me, how would that change my relationship with my friends and my family? It's a good thing for us to think about. It's a good thing for us to dwell on this week. Amen? Let's stand together and pull out your hymnals and